welcome to the latest episode of Cover to Cover. I'm Joanne Joseph. Great to be with you as always. I've called this episode Journeys because it deals with all manner of travels that constitute the subject matter of this week's books. One of those journeys is particularly arduous, as in the case of The Boy Who Never Gave Up by Dr. Emmanuel Taban. One encompasses the spirit of adventure in How I Accidentally Became a Global Stock Photo by Shabnam Khan, and the rest are journeys of individual growth, whether of a financial or personal nature, as explored in books by Nicolette Mashile and Norma Young. But I'm going to start with what was both a heartbreaking and uplifting read, The Boy Who Never Gave Up, a story of disadvantage yet determination. I'm so delighted to have the author, Dr. Emmanuel Taban, with me today. Dr. Taban, thank you so much for coming in to speak to me.
Thank you, Joseph, for having me.
Really lovely to have you. I want to go back to the beginning because the book is so vast. It covers so many different aspects of your life. But I want to start with your childhood, and that was a fairly pleasant childhood in Loka Round until it was disrupted and you had to move to the capital, Juba. But throughout your childhood, there is this kind of oppressive sense of fighters around you, whether it is government forces, whether it is rebel forces. Those are sort of ubiquitous presence in your life, posing a threat to your mother, to your family, to your childhood. Tell me a little bit about that, Dr. Taban.
I think, sadly enough, the instability has been a major issue in Africa. And when I grew up, it was the same scenario where war was inevitable. You know, people fighting over something or nothing. And of course, as you mentioned, when I grew up, my life was happy. I was a happy child.
Yeah.
But the problem was, of course, is that we always got this senseless war in Africa. And most of them because it's born out of greed. And unfortunately, the women, the children suffer the most. And unfortunately, I got caught up in the middle of that war where I witnessed quite a lot of atrocities, rapes, summary execution, and witnessed a lot of dead bodies, and that, I think, for me, that was the story of my life at the beginning. That probably, maybe that was the first time that I actually learned my anatomy lesson, which is not by choice, but by force. And I think for me, as a child, it was quite very intrinsic. And the fact that I spent most of the night always in the hiding place, in the bunkers or in the bush, in fear of being caught in the middle of the war.
Yeah. I mean, you moved to the capital, Juba, later, as I mentioned, but it sounds like life there was just as tense for you, and it got worse after 1990 when the war intensified.
Yeah, I think the issue that, because one of the biggest issues in Africa, of course, is the issue with the fatherless child, and I was one of that child.
Yeah.
And of course, when you grow up in the village, we have so much to eat. We have a lot of wild fruits, mangoes and all that. That's what we survive in. But once you move in Juba, of course, now everything you have to buy. And my mother was an uneducated, unskilled woman, and she could not really provide for us. And I think that was the beginning of my difficult journey in my life. Unfortunately, we become a burden that the families must share for us to prosper in life.
Yeah. I want to come back to your journey in a moment, but let's look at this portrait of your mother, because it's such a beautifully drawn one. She is hardworking. She is stoic. She's committed to her family. She's very intelligent. But she's had little opportunity in her life, and yet she's a survivalist who does her best to keep you and your siblings alive.
Yes, I think my mother, like any other African women, who are probably a backbone of the society, I mean, she's not an angel. She made mistakes. And those mistakes, probably that's what led to us struggling in life. But despite that, she have tried, with her little knowledge and education, to try to provide for us and give us that safety net. You know, but it comes to the point where, as a grown-up child, you find that actually there's more of the world out there than what your mother could provide. And at that time, we reached the point that she could not provide for us, especially as a teenager boy, with a lot of peer pressure, that she couldn't really keep up to provide for me. And I think probably that's what the beginning of my downturn of my life.
Yeah. And of course, what a downturn it is, because I'm not going to get into the detail of what leads you to this point. But essentially, you begin this enormous journey out of your country, largely on foot, through several countries through the continent. You know, I didn't know at some point what kept you going, how you did not give up as you traversed one country, from one country to another, on foot, with all the setbacks in between.
You know, there's one of very interesting about Africans. we always live on luck. And yes, I was lucky to have survived my journey. Because suppose during my journey, I could have probably been bitten by a snake or been eaten by animals, but didn't happen. But what probably that pushed me was my perseverance, determination, and that will to keep on going forward. And that's what's probably what's lacking in the youths of today in Africa, that ability to persevere and that ability to try to move forward despite what obstacles get thrown into you. And I think for me, lessons that probably learned was that to saying that, you know what, for a long time, Africans have been the victims of luck, fate, and hope. And maybe it's time that we start looking at my journey as that you know what, true, no matter how hard the obstacles are, we need to continue to persevere. And that's what the youth probably need to do, keep moving forward. And after moving forward, chances are good that you might find some hope. What keep me going was my determination and my perseverance, because I was looking for educations. And I knew that my strength lie on the educations. For whatever reason, but my mother told me that one day I'll become something. And that's what probably keep me going. And I knew that one day if I find an opportunity to go to school, and I would be able to make it in life. And that's what pushed me going from destination to destination until I found myself in South Africa.
I mean, there are two things to take out of that. Firstly, the interest that your mother took in you. I mean, she broke her back to make sure that you got an education. It was a very disrupted one. Mm. But that has, in a way, been your salvation, hasn't it, Dr.?
I think those 5 years of schooling in South Sudan, probably it was my backbone, what made me today. Those are the 5 years. And if you remember, in all my life, I actually did almost total eight years of primary and high schools as compared to 12 years. And I think for me, that's amazing. And compared to what I've achieved, that's take quite a lot of determination to do that. But yeah, thanks to my mother for giving me that basic education, which laid the foundations for my adulthood life. For generations, African youths, children, which that time I was 16, I suffer as a result of a failure of the leadership in the continent, in South Sudan. And that's for me, it's been a story of Africa from generation to generation, that we are victims of our own leadership. Though politically, we are quick to blame other forces externally to be architecture of our misfortune. And that notion, as I stand here, sitting here today, I disagree with it. Because I think as Africa, we need to start looking at our youth. And I don't think at this current century that Africans, children, should be taking the journey that I took. Because I survived purely because of luck and perseverance. And we need to kind of remove that from our youth to make sure that the youths are skilled, given opportunity, and also look after and develop so that they become the future of the country, not crossing borders, walking through dark roads, potholes, to look for opportunity, or crossing the seas to try to find the Southern Europe. And I think for me, that's where African problem is. So my grown-up just exposed that what African children today are going through.
Thank you so much, Dr. Taban. Really inspiring speaking to you today. If overcoming fear is one of the central tenets of that novel, it has something in common with the next book we're about to explore. How I Accidentally Became a Global Stock Photo by Shabnam Khan explores that and a host of other topics in her lighthearted take on the unexpected and often strange adventures that shove her out of her comfort zone. I had a chat with her about how the book came about.
Well, I didn't expect this book. I was working on a second novel at the time, and I was just doing writing residencies and traveling, and I was sharing these kind of funny stories that were happening online on Twitter to me, you know, like the stock photo and becoming a bride on a rooftop in Shanghai. And Andrea Nachel from Pan Macmillan said, why don't you write a book about this? Because it's such, you share such funny stories. So don't you want to put it in a collection, in a book? And so I thought, oh, okay. And so that happened pretty quickly from that point. And I didn't expect this book. This was a very unexpected book. And that was sort of the inspiration behind it. Really just someone coming to me and saying, don't you want to put it together in a book? Yeah.
And you know, it's funny because I read your previous book, Onion Tears, a few years ago. It is a beautiful book. So I hope it's still in circulation so that your fans can go out there and get that book still. It really left an impression on me, that book. But I imagine because of its genre, that it allowed you a little bit more privacy as a writer. It seems like you've almost bared all in this book, How I Accidentally Became a Global Stock Photo. Does that lend a certain element of vulnerability to it in opening up about your life, your family, your experiences, your fears?
Yeah, I mean, I struggled with that part because I do say in the book I'm a private person, and then I end up talking about everything, my fears, my anxiety, my anxiousness about before I do anything. So yes, I had to be vulnerable to be able to write this book. And I didn't expect that when I started the book. I just thought it was going to be a collection of funny stories put together and we're going to get it out there. And I realized when I was writing the book that I can only write the book and I can only share these stories if I share myself and I share who I am. Like, the book would have been impossible if I didn't tell you from the beginning about the kind of person I am and what I was scared of doing and what was hindering me and what I wanted to achieve. So, I don't think the book would have been possible if I didn't make myself a bit vulnerable. But it was scary, yes.
Yeah. And you know what I was thinking about? You deal with all of the subject matter with a great deal of humor, right? You obviously have a great sense of humor. But would you say, in summing up the book, it's such a hard book to summarize or even to categorize, but would you say in summing up, it's possibly about the story of a young woman who uses all of the experiences in her life as a springboard to overcome fear?
Yeah, I mean, the book kept changing as I was writing it. First, it was a collection of funny stories. Then it became a memoir. And then, you know, in the beginning of the book, I just say it's a love letter to anyone who's been afraid, you know. And then now as I read it, and now it's coming out in the world, I see other people describing it as a woman going on this journey who was told she couldn't do certain things and she wanted to live a non-traditional life, you know. And so it's so interesting to me how everybody takes their own thing away from this book and what this book is defined as. And that's what makes it special for me, is that I didn't even see certain things, but when people are reading it, they come back and tell me, I took this away from the book. So that's been good.
You know what's interesting to me, because I come from much the same community as you, right? The Indian South African community. And I was wondering, because I think this is not a question a lot of South African Indian women ask themselves all the time, right? I was wondering why you did it, because it's easy to remain within the community. It's easy to remain within your comfort zone. But you push yourself, whether you're in the Himalayas, whether you're in New York, whether you are in Morocco, you're pushing yourself just that little bit further all the time out of your comfort zone. Why did you feel the necessity to do that, Shabna?
I'm not sure. It's something innate in you, but I do think a lot of it came from reading a lot as a young child. So I think when you read when you're young, it shows you the possibility in the world. You know, suddenly the world that you're given and you think this is my world and this is going to be my existence, reading breaks that open. Like, you're suddenly like there's no walls around you anymore. And it shows you the possibility of what can happen. And books show you anything can happen. So I think, as a young child, I was just continuously reading. My sisters were reading. My grandfather was telling me stories. And so even though, like, society around me told me the best place for you is at home and you should, you know, you need to get married at 21 and have kids, I think I just always carried that sort of, like, you know, I call it like a fire in your chest that I want to live how I want to live. Like, I need to find out for myself what life is there. At the end of the day, it's me living my life, you know. So I think, you know, having storytellers in my family and reading books as a child sort of kept that going. And that's why I also think it's just so important for children to be reading all the time, because it can affect the trajectory of your life and where you go in the future. It's not just about your childhood imagination. It's something you will carry like a little bag with you for the rest of your life, you know. So I suspect that's maybe where it came from. And I only kind of saw that when I wrote the book also. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And can I dwell on that for a moment? Because there's real beauty in that, how you describe reading as your first superpower, right? And just explain that to me. Put that in the context of growing up in largely in apartheid South Africa, where you are confined to a segregated area. Your life comprises a certain number of things that you know, but the only way that you really travel is through books, because I totally identify with that experience.
Yeah. I mentioned in the book that for a long time, I thought Indians were the only people in South Africa because of apartheid. We lived in an Indian area. I went to school with Indian kids and my high school was Indian kids. And I didn't really interact with other races because we were so confined within our suburb. When I was reading, I was like, oh, you know, there's people in other countries and there's Siberia and there's America. And there's women who are doing things, because for me, around me, they were like, you grew up to be a cook who cooked for your family and who looked after your children. And that was what I saw. But in the books, I saw a woman going and having adventures and climbing magic faraway trees. And, it really changed my life growing up in South Africa, particularly in this suburb and in this community. And it showed me the possibilities. And you've kind of summed it up in the question. You know, the reading just took me out of the life that I had here, which was a very small, contained world.
I'm also thinking, I was thinking about people from other communities who are also holed up for all sorts of reasons, right? It may be socioeconomic factors, it may be political factors, it may be religious factors, it may be gendered factors. Do you think this book is going to have a broad appeal to everyone who finds themselves a little bit trapped by their own lives, their own identity, or their own milieu that they've been born into?
Oh, yes, I hope so. That's kind of what I want the book to make people see, that other people will always tell you what to do and what path to take. And most people will end up doing it. But you have to follow what you feel is right for you. And so even for years, I was, it's not an easy thing to do. I'm just saying it, but for years I was depressed because I just felt all this pressure on me to be a particular type of woman and I couldn't break out of it. And it is a small step by thing, and we have to talk about it, write books about it and encourage people to, and I talk about it in the book, Finding the Edge, because people always tell you, don't go near the edge. The edge is dangerous. You don't want to see what's on the other side. Stay in the middle with everyone else. But you need to go to that edge to see what's there for yourself. And that edge can be when you're in the deep depression and you get to the edge, or when you see you hear a beautiful piece of music and you come to that edge, or you watch a beautiful piece of art. It takes you to a place where people tell you not to go, but actually you see where you want to go. And it's a place where you begin to love yourself for who you are, because then you're actually accepting yourself for who you are. So I tell people, the edge is beautiful, and I want people to pursue their path, not the path other people are giving them.
Well, having explored two very different journeys, it's time to explore some literature that's likely to take you on a journey of introspection. Self-help books are flying off the shelves during this period of COVID where people are searching for answers. And you may find them in the books we're looking at next that have a distinct bent toward entrepreneurship, personal finance, business, and also a social conscience. Norma Young is the author of We Need More Tables, and Nicolette Mashile has written What's Your Next Move? Both books explore slightly different themes. I want to welcome our guests today. Welcome to you, Norma and Nicolette. Really
Thank
lovely
so
to
much.
Have you with me. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Joanne.
So Norma, let me start with you. We Need More Tables is a beautiful book, I think, and it's something that is so desperately needed in our time because it talks about how we navigate privilege in a country where there's just so much lack and so much want. Thinking that every day, which I think many of us do, but don't actually act on, and putting it into a book are two very different things. So well done for that. Tell me what went into that. Gosh, it was really a process that stemmed from my own frustrations, where as I joined the employment market and then started to navigate up this proverbial corporate ladder, and my income started to increase, started to feel a tension between my ability to afford some luxuries and the privileges I could access and the needs that I saw around me. I'm from a township in Durban called Claremont, and was just increasingly aware of how much need there was amongst members of my family, my neighbors, and just so many people that I knew and loved who couldn't access, let alone the privileges and the luxuries that I could. They couldn't access some of the basics like running water and secure shelter. And because I was feeling this tension, I started to explore it for myself. And the book really is a summation of what I learned through my personal experiences, as well as the insights of experts and academics and other people facing similar challenges and frustrations.
Yeah. So tell me, just give me a sense of, and I know you'll just be scraping the surface here, but how do we go about building more tables?
I think there's three really crucial steps that each of us can take. The first one is making sure that we're thinking justly. And this is the first premise, or rather kind of the first leg of a table that we're going to look at starting to build. Thinking justly is critically important because how we see the world and how we see individuals really impacts how we interact with them. The second step that I think is hugely important is for all of us to live simply. And that is premised then when you understand, for example, through thinking justly, that meritocracy has afforded you things that you haven't worked for example. Then you're able to live simply because you understand that there's been elements such as luck, for example, that might have fostered some of the privileges and luxuries that you get to enjoy. And then the third element is giving generously. And that, again, it's sort of building on each step, that when you're thinking justly, you see the world in a more fair perspective. And because of that, you're able then to live simply. And when you're living simply and able to meet your basic needs and afford yourself some rather than all of what you want, then you're able to give generously while making sure that people around you are able to access the basics.
Yeah. Nicolette, your generosity takes the form of giving South Africans who have had really had lack of access to information about personal finance, it gives them access, it gives them a gateway to that world. And that's why I thought your book, What's Your Next Move, is such a valuable one. Tell me what prompted you to put that into the format in which you have.
Sure. So when I was growing up, so we grew up in Bushbuck Ridge. Fortunately or unfortunately for my sister and I, we got put into boarding school quite early. Mm. And one of the things that my dad said to Bridget and I was, remember why we're having to make some of these sacrifices. 8 years old, Bridget was 10. We were moved to Nelspruit. We lived in a flat because Nelspruit Primary didn't have a boarding school. So you can imagine these two little kids can't speak English. So you're going to a multiracial English medium school for the first time. You are moving in with dad who, look, I mean, as a man, is not there most of the time. Yeah. He's doing what he needs to do. So we are kind of bringing ourselves up. And every single time we have a conversation with my mom when we go home on the weekend, it's always a conversation about there is a bigger purpose for you guys to go out and do out there. And one of the things my dad always try to educate us on is go and get the information that our people cannot access. Mm. And I think that resonated with me for such a long time. In 2012, I became a teacher. Big mistake. You know, kids are not for all of us. And kids are highly influenced, like they're influenced by everything that you do. So I realized then that maybe this is not my target audience. Maybe there's another audience that I need to be speaking to. And I realized, and sometimes, you know, you get whispers in your ears, whether it's from divine power or whoever, that says, this is the information that we need you to go out and put out. And for me, it came through making financial mistakes. And I remember the first big financial mistake that I made, I stopped and I said, hey man, who was supposed to teach me this? Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I did not come from a family, I mean, my parents both educated. So we came from a fairly privileged family in terms of education and all this information, but there was still this big hole that was not being plugged, and that was the financial education. So I thought, you know what, let's go on a journey. Let's share information. Let's have a conversation about money. Let's talk to people. I mean, it's come with its stumbling blocks, but it's kind of working, you know, and putting it into a book was such a big thing for me. It was a complex that I had to overcome because I failed my degree at Rhodes University. And I remember actually a couple of years back when I was in Nelspruit Primary, and I had to stay behind every single day to get my vocab to the place it needed to be, to do spelling. I mean, there was a thing called closed procedure in Nelspruit Primary that I had to do every single afternoon just to get my English to a place where I could, you know, compete with the kids in my class. So fast forward a couple of years later, you fail your degree at Rhodes University. I mean, you must know when you go to Rhodes University, all of a sudden you meet kids from all walks of life who speak English very differently from what you do. And they know so many things. They did A-levels, they did O-levels. And you're like, I just got my trick, guys. And you find out that actually maybe there's quite a lot about the world that I need to know and understand. And then you write a book. And then it's like, girl, what are you doing? How dare you write a book, you know? But I understood the bigger call, that the book needed to be written because it needs to reach people. And one of the things that I always say to people who buy my book is, buy the book. When you're done reading it, please pass it on.
All right.
Because if I can get it to as many people as possible, that really would be something that, you know, works for me.
Yeah, it's working for your readers. That's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing such good feedback from people on the fact that, you know, even if they've come through a privileged education system, there's still gaps in the education system, right? So this book is useful to all of us.
Look, you know, and whenever people say to me, the book is doing this for me, the book is doing this for me, the book is changing me, and I'm like, okay, are you doing something about it? Because that's ultimately what the book is trying to do, right? It says we all, everything that I wrote about in that book, most of us experienced at some level, you know? You actually read the book and you're like, oh, Nicolette is writing my entire life. Or because people say to me, oh, you're dragging me. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I literally want to zoom your attention on the one area of your life that you actually have the power to change.
Yeah. And it's personal finance, your relationship with money.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I always tell people, I mean, a simple thing that, like, being able to negotiate your interest rates.
Sure.
Many people don't know that.
Mm.
You know, you walk into a bank, a lot of us see these banks at these hierarchical places where, oh my goodness, if you're, you know, you're dealing with the bank, you must beg, you must plead, you must. And the reality is that if you understand how banks make their money, you understand how much of an important stakeholder you are to them. But we need to get South Africans to get to that point and understand that. Because there was actually a lady who sent me such a beautiful testimony. And she said, Nicolette, I walked in there, I was buying a house. They gave me 10% interest rate. I said to them, no, my financial coach, Nicolette, says I can negotiate for this. And she negotiated down to 7. And I was like, that's fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's really what the book is about. The book is about, it's good that you know. It's great that we all now know, but what are we doing about it? And it's the action that I need people to be able to take out of the book.
I think it's going to be such a valuable book for so many generations of people, actually, Nicolette, as they acquaint themselves with personal finance. Norman, you looked at two other books for us. You looked at Untamed by Glennon Doyle and The 5 a.m. Club. How appealing are those two? I'm not into self-help books.
I can tell you, you're missing out. I started the 5 a.m. club because I am an early riser naturally.
Okay, you're on your own with that one.
Except what I found really interesting about the book was the treatment of it being not in classic, serious, formal, academic self-help language. It's set as an extended allegory of sorts, and so it's quite fantastical. The characters experience some magical occurrences, and that I thought was very surprising and unexpected for the self-help genre. It did make the book easier to track and follow, but at the same time, it also made it difficult to glean the more serious point.
What about the Glennon Doyle Untamed? I mean, that sounds like a more personal account of the experience of breaking out of strictures.
Yeah, this was also a fascinating book. I had known Glennon Doyle through Christian circles. She had been in a marriage with a man, and they'd gone through some turbulence, and they ended up breaking up, and she's now married to a woman. So I knew her sort of in her previous life, when she'd written a book and shared around how her and her husband had navigated these tumultuous years. And they ended up then separating and divorcing. And so it was interesting in a sense to reconnect with her when she's not able to reflect on her previous life and her current life. Yeah. What I thought was really interesting about the book is that it's a series of vignettes. And so you really can stop and start at leisure. You can figure out the chapter headings are fascinating. You can't always glean what the chapter is going to be about, but you really can just eye your way down through the contents page and see what appeals to you. And each vignette is a standalone piece that either shares a life lesson or a recollection, a memory, conversation that she's had. And so it's a really light but impactful book that doesn't require you to sort of approach it as one tome. You dip in and dip out at leisure.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for those detailed reviews. Nicolette, thank you for sharing your journey with us of creating What's Your Next Move. I know you're busy with a children's book right now. Hopefully we'll be able to speak to you about that in a short time. And Norma, we're waiting for more literature from you as well. I know We Need More Tables is not your only book. You've delved in during COVID to recipes and the cultural context of those. So waiting for more from you as well. No pressure.
All coming in good time.
Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
So lovely having the ladies with us to actually talk us through what's the latest hitting the shelves and what you should be reflecting on if you're on that personal journey. Now, remember, you can go to www.exclusivebooks.co.za to get your hands on any of these books, or you can get them in store if you prefer. Eusebius McKaiser will bring you the next episode of Cover to Cover in 2 weeks' time. Till next time, from me, Joanne Joseph, take care. Bye-bye.